Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:07 British Summer Time. Today is October 15th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and it has been quite a remarkable week from on a number of fronts, starting out with the stock markets. And the Dow Jones is into the last hour of trading on Friday, and it's well above. It's held above the 11,000 level. It's testing the April highs. We've had a remarkable advance over the last 6 weeks from the early September lows. And markets are a little bit overbought in the very short term. Certainly, the Dow Jones isn't the most overbought on any kind of measure, but it is at an area of potential resistance, and it's probably at an area of where people will begin to ask questions about will it or won't it be able to sustain an upward break here. The Nasdaq has outperformed all along, and while both the Dow and the S&P were a little bit softer in here today, the Nasdaq is up by about 1%. Looking a little bit wider and staying with larger cap markets, the DAX in Germany broke upwards this week. It's up on consecutive days. It was up. It was probably one of the better performing markets in Europe today. It's pushing above the 6,400 level. It's testing the 6,500 level in here today. And this is a powerful breakout from a well-defined trading range. And we can continue to give the upside the benefit of the doubt in the absence of a countermanding downward dynamic. It's a relatively similar story for a number of the Northern European indices. The FTSE has pushed back up to the 5,700 level. That's being led by some of the larger mining companies, such as BHP Billiton. And Southern Europe has sustained a progression of higher reaction lows over the last few months. Now, there is still a marked difference between what we have in Southern Europe and in Northern Europe, but the Southern European countries are beginning to show signs that investor interest is beginning to return, although they have sustained such technical damage that upside is likely to be limited to an extension of base formation development or a lengthy ranging phase for some of the better performers such as Spain. In Asia, while we see that in the USA and in Europe, some of these markets are breaking out of year-long ranges and are looking really quite impressive. In Asia, it's an altogether more impressive story because you have the Hang Seng, another large cap market, completing a year-long consolidation and breaking upwards this week. That has been lagging some of the other markets in Asia, with Singapore continuing to hold an impressive breakout and the ASEAN region generally outperforming on a global basis. The Indian market has been consolidating in the region of its 2008 highs. It was a little bit weaker into the end of the week, but it continues to look like a relatively gradual consolidation in the region of the high rather than anything more serious. This has been a sweet spot for stock markets generally, and it's been broadly supported by the weakness of the US dollar. And the US dollar has become increasingly overextended relative to its 200-day moving average and is short-term oversold by just about any measure. And whereas we've seen that there's been a lot of talk about risk on, risk off, they could just as easily be characterized as a dollar carry trade. So there's this inverse correlation between the US dollar and risk assets. And the US dollar was a little bit firmer into the end of Friday. So having spent the last couple of days above 140 on the euro dollar rate, it strengthened to 139.63 as I speak. And while that is probably one of the stronger days for the dollar in the last few weeks, it's not in a dynamic fashion. So additional follow-through will be required to indicate that the dollar is finding any kind of meaningful support. But it certainly paused in its downtrend. And the overextension relative to the 200-day moving average would suggest that there is room for a short covering rally in here. When we look at how that has affected some of the commodities, then this has been another very good week for the precious metals. The gold price hit a high today in the region of sorry, $1,385, and is closing out the day at $1,364. So it has pushed on to new high ground on consecutive days this week, and while it is finishing the week with a little bit of a whimper, then the progression of higher reaction lows remains very much intact. It hasn't done anything to scare the bulls that are out there, and reactions that have that we've seen have been limited to in the region of $10 to $20. Now, $10 to $20 would have been a very big move 5 or 6 years ago in gold, but not so much anymore with prices well in excess of $1,300. But just as the U.S. dollar is overextended to the downside, gold is becoming increasingly overextended to the upside. So we are increasingly close to the next mean reversion pullback. Silver has taken over leadership from gold. It's appreciated in no uncertain terms over the last couple of weeks. It's moved from $18 to test $25 this week. So that's an impressive advance in the space of approximately 8 weeks. And silver is also one of these commodities that is really quite overextended relative to its 200-day moving average. In the industrial metal complex, there has been quite a deal of strengthening within medium-term uptrends, and copper in particular is pushing back up towards the $4 level, and tin, which has been the leader all the way along, has been posting new highs this week, and while a little bit weaker into the end of the week, is still in a remarkably consistent uptrend. The agricultural commodities are finishing the week a little bit softer, but they've held the massive upward dynamic that we saw last Friday, and they continue to look like they are attracting increased investor interest. So if we take a little bit of a step back and look at what we have out here, we have agricultural commodities have had a massive surge, and it's not just in wheat, corn, soybeans, and oats, but coffee prices are close to all-time highs. Sugar is recovering. Cotton is at, I think it's 15 or 20-year highs. And that's going to feed into inflationary pressures in the West at some point. It's already feeding into inflationary pressures in much of Asia and Latin America. The energy complex has been broadly going sideways for the last year, and oil continues to range above the $80 level. It was a little bit softer in here today, but has held above the $80 level for the last week or so, perhaps a little bit longer than that. Oil has been consolidating and ranging in a well-defined pattern. So that's an explosion waiting to happen. And when it does sustain a move above $85, then there is a strong likelihood that we'll see $100 in a relatively short period of time subsequently. And agricultural prices on their own will take some time to move an inflationary measure, but agricultural prices and energy prices pushing upwards will begin to hit people's pockets in quite a meaningful way in a very short period of time. But this comes back very much to the two different investment worlds that we have out there, because on the one hand you have Asia's population centers particularly, and commodity producing Latin America, where they're running surpluses. A lot of them have turned into creditor nations. Their standard of fiscal governance is irreproachable. Their corporate governance is certainly improving. Corruption measures, while coming off a low base, are also improving, and their stock markets are demonstrating all of that in their outperformance. If we look at how the currencies of this region are performing relative to the US dollar in particular, then there is a strong argument for why they should be strengthening. Probably not very much more in the very short term, but over the medium to longer term, there is a strong argument for why Asian and Latin American currencies should be getting considerably stronger, because their economies are growing and outpacing those of much of Europe and the USA and Japan by a considerable margin. And sooner or later, that is going to be felt in the currency markets. Investors are increasingly becoming aware of this fact that they can move their capital into a firmer currency and into a high-growth region, and that they can benefit accordingly, rather than accepting the deteriorating standards of governance, the excessive deficits, and the debasement of fiat currencies that continues to plague investor confidence in the USA, Europe, and Japan. So we live in a two-tier global economy. That isn't to say that the US or the Western markets are going to disappear into the ocean. Certainly not. But in terms of relative performance, we've seen this year that the Asian markets and some of the smaller commodity-producing Latin American markets have outperformed spectacularly. And that is a theme that Fuller Money subscribers will be really quite familiar with, because we've seen this type of action happen on in a number of years over the last decade. What we've had at the moment is a remarkably sweet spot for stock markets generally. The last couple of months, particularly for some of those better performing Fuller Money themes, has been really quite spectacular. And while we would love to think that that is going to last indefinitely, that is very seldom the case. So when we see that these markets have become so remarkably overextended relative to the 200-day moving averages, we know that the risk of the next mean reversion correction has increased quite considerably. This isn't the time to be adding big positions to one's long, but rather to be much more conscious of money control discipline, so that if one is adding to a long position, it's on the basis that it's not increasing the average buy price for a total position to a place where one would be putting a technical stop and still be in the money. So money control discipline should really be what people are focusing on when something becomes so remarkably overextended. And trailing stops, particularly for those markets that are accelerating, such as silver, are certainly the order of the day right now. What the tendency is to become increasingly bullish as markets accelerate, and to become more bearish as they pull back towards the 200-day moving averages, when it is the exact opposite condition, attitude that we need to foster. Back in August, there was remarkable bearishness, and a lot of that bearishness has been swept under the carpet as so many of these markets have surged onto the upside. And people are becoming increasingly bullish, particularly of gold. But while none of these things look like they have topped just yet, we do know that the dollar is increasingly overextended. Now, the dollar in the short term is overextended and is likely to have a short covering rally in the not too distant future. Over the medium term, it remains a crisis currency. So the best that can be said for the dollar over the medium term is that relative to the euro or to the pound, that it is in a base development or base formation development on that dollar index. But when we look at it in the Asian dollar index or the Latin American dollar index, it's a little bit overextended in the very short term, but this looks like a secular downtrend. And that is, again, indicative of the two-tier world that we're in. And when people talk about dollar weakness, is it against strong currencies or comparatively weak currencies? The big secular theme is the greatest urbanization in history. And that's occurring in the major population centers of the world. So we're having an unprecedented number of people moving from an agrarian standard of living to moving into the cities. And the number of young people that will be growing up in the next decade and looking for education, starting their own families, and with aspirations to the standard of living that many take for granted in the West, is really unprecedented. So these countries not only have a large number of people hitting their most productive ages, but they have the fiscal policies in place to attempt to control inflation. They are growing faster than population growth, which is helping to expand the middle class. And those middle class consumers are spending. And they're not going to be spending forever, but because so many of these new middle class people are young people who need to start families, who need to kit out their houses, who have aspirations to buy cars or perhaps even two cars, and are aspiring to own luxury branded goods and accessories, then that's creating demand for consumer goods and services just about everywhere. So while a lot of these countries will offer fantastic opportunities over the long term for investors willing to park their money both in those countries or in companies that do the majority of their business in those countries and in those currencies, there are plenty of other opportunities for investors who want to stay in their domestic currency but gain access to the expansion of the global middle class, because the European and US markets are replete with companies that have global franchises that dominate their sectors and are leveraged to growth in the global middle class. And these true blue chips are likely to offer excellent investment opportunities over the medium to longer term. In the very short term, there are a large number of markets that are overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. From the perspective of long investors, this is a fantastic sweet spot, but it also means that the next big pullback should be viewed as a buying opportunity in fuller money themes from an investment perspective. The Dow and the S&P have been going broadly sideways for the last decade, and monetary policy remains remarkably accommodative. And the supply of government bonds, particularly in the West, has exploded. But it's also increased in a number of emerging markets. And you had Mexico issuing a 100-year bond a couple of weeks ago. Brazil are talking about doing the same thing. So we're seeing that the remarkable bull trend for US Treasuries, which has seen yields compress for much of the last 30 years, is in its final stages. We know it's in its final stages because supply is exploding and prices remain elevated. And it's not just in the USA this is occurring, because you have a very similar story in the UK, in Japan, and increasingly in Europe. So there's absolutely no shortage of these government bonds, and the conditions under which a number of countries can borrow has improved really quite considerably. If you'd said to someone 10 years ago that Brazil or Mexico would have been able to issue a 100-year bond, you would have been laughed out of the room. That's certainly not the case today, and these countries and an increasing number of companies are really taking advantage of the ability to borrow at such remarkably low rates. This isn't a situation that's going to persist indefinitely. The demand for yield has pushed some rather risky assets into really quite overbought levels in terms of what the yield has been compressed down to. And that, to an extent, mirrors the compression of yield that we had before the credit crisis. Now, it's a very different type of scenario today, because governments are the ones that are buying up the sovereign debt for the USA, Europe, and Japan, whereas it's investors, institutional and private investors, are buying up the debt that some of the emerging markets are issuing at really quite attractive levels. Now, those countries, particularly in Latin America and in Asia, they're comparatively under-leveraged. This isn't the kind of scenario where these governments and companies are leveraging up from really quite high levels already. A number of Asian markets in particular are under-leveraged, so they have plenty of room to leverage up on the debt side and to help to fuel their growth. And these economies are really only beginning to get started in terms of their catch-up. And the catch-up that we see these countries partake in over the next decade and counting is likely to take them to comparative standards of living in a number of places that we take for granted now in much of Europe and the USA. And that is going to be a remarkable secular bull story that is likely to continue for at least the next decade and potentially even longer than that. We remain in this two-tier global economy, and I think some of the greatest threats that are out there right now are an abuse of the quantitative easing system. Quantitative easing was quite acceptable back in 2008 when we almost had a collapse in the global financial system, and we've had a massive slowdown in the velocity of money. So governments stepped in and increased the money supply, and that's what you'd expect them to do to avert the worst effects of a recession. But we're relying on just about every country that has been affected by the credit crisis to remove the stimulus in a timely fashion when the velocity of money begins to pick up once more. And we're not seeing that. That was an unlikely prospect from the very beginning. But the pressure that we have on currencies, where the US dollar has weakened for the last 4 months and given up 20 cents against the euro in that time, and probably a little bit more in some of the other better performing currencies, that's putting a lot of pressure on the manufacturing sectors in Asia and in Latin America. And the respective governments, they're not too happy about the speed with which the dollar is declining. In this case, quantitative easing is being abused to a certain extent because the very threat of it is helping to give the US dollar a competitive advantage in terms of its exchange rate. And the last thing we want is an active competitive devaluation. It's the fear of that that's helping to support the gold price at $1,365. I think a threat is that we have a disorderly breakdown in in a currency. It needn't necessarily be the US dollar. But what we do have at the moment is an increasing number of countries attempting to devalue their currencies. And that is not a sustainable pattern. So that certainly is a situation that needs to be watched. In tandem with that, the explosion in the supply of government debt and the amount of debt that governments are taking on, particularly the USA, without really committing itself to spending cuts, that's also not a sustainable situation. And oil has been consolidating for a year. And as I said, a well-defined range like that is an explosion waiting to happen. So if oil pushes to the upside and breaks out, then it could move to the upside in a meaningful way in a short period of time. And that would also be a headwind for the global economy. But in the absence of those main obstacles to global growth, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the major urbanization theme over the medium to longer term. Certainly, it will be punctuated by medium-term corrections, but provided the primary consistency characteristics are maintained, then reversions to the mean can be characterized as relatively good buying opportunities for the medium to longer term. In the very short term, I think a lot of these markets are overextended and are susceptible to probably a meaningful pullback if we see the dollar strengthen in any meaningful way. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, but wish all the best to all of you.